Welcome to Northeast Delta Dental Radio. I'm Tom Raffio for Northeast Delta Dental Radio, and I'm also the head coach of the dental insurance company known as Northeast Delta Dental. Well, it's hard to believe it's already mid-September. Where did Labor Day go? Where did September 11th, which was the 20th anniversary of the September 11th tragedy, where did that go? I want to give a big shout-out to my last week's guest, who was Dr. Artis Olson, who was took on a very complex topic about HPV and the role that the dental community has in that education and those vaccines. On the subject of oral health, this weekend joining me is Dr. Joe Arante, who is our esteemed Vice President of Network and Clinical Strategies at Northeast Dental Dental, and prior to that was the CEO of Previsor, which powers our health oral wellness program. And now Joe is leading all of our efforts in professional relations, both in terms of networks and in clinical strategies, as I just outlined in his title. So, Joe, I know you're a busy guy. Thank you for joining me this weekend. And I think since we're about the same age, don't you agree, like, the years, the days, everything flies by, because it wasn't that long ago when we were in the midst of the height of the first wave of the pandemic. Everybody was saying, gosh, can't wait until 2020 is over, and here we are on September 18th and 19th of 2021, and not a lot has changed other than a lot of people are vaccinated, and now we're waiting for 2022. But in any event, Joe, thank you for joining me this weekend.
All right.
Why don't you take a crack at talking a little bit about the role that the dental community has in educating their patients on the human papillomavirus, and I know that it can get a little tricky in the sense that, you know, parents have to really, you know, educate, you know, their children, but I do know that our dental community has been very instrumental in trying to get youth, being vaccinated for HPV. So what do you think the dentist's role in that? And then we'll get into your topic today, which is the dry mouth.
Well, HPV is it's become known to be one of the factors in oral pharyngeal cancers, which can be pretty deadly cancers. They're certainly disfiguring and have huge impact on your quality of life if you happen to get one. But they seem to be an independent risk component for getting oral pharyngeal cancer, which is basically mouth cancer, and so vaccinating for it and preventing the spread and the proliferation of the virus in your body is one of the known ways to mitigate the risk of getting oral cancer, which is certainly good. You know, we always think about oral cancers with smokers, but it actually can happen to anybody. And I've had a few relatives that have had throat cancer, which is an HPV-related cancer. And so it's more common than we like to think. The reason that we like to get the vaccinations done early, they seem to be much, much, much more effective if done in the early teen years versus waiting till you're an adult. As an adult, they become less effective, require more doses, and at some point they become relatively ineffective in preventing your getting HPV virus. So that's one of the reasons we try to catch it early.
Awesome. That's a wonderful explanation, and I know we have dental office teams listening to the show as well as parents, so keep that all in mind. So, but today we're talking about dry mouth, and why should we be concerned about dry mouth? I know that you have a lot to say on this. You know, maybe you can start with you know, what causes dry mouth, and then circle back in terms of, you know, what we can do about it?
Well, you know, in dentistry, we have basically two common and overarching, the two diseases that we deal with are tooth decay or caries and periodontal disease, or otherwise more commonly known as gum disease. And those diseases are, as you get older, becomes much more of a concern. Dry mouth becomes much more of a concern. The technical term for that is xerostomia. And what can cause that is a whole slurry of things that, as you age, come about. You're usually on more medications when you age, and some medications are common amongst older adults, and they're affected. They affect dry mouth in some people, particularly things like diuretics, which makes sense. That's what's commonly known as a water pill, or beta blockers, which many seniors take because of high blood pressure or AFib, atrial fibrillation, or a variety of things. And there are even some conditions that can cause it, like diabetes, Alzheimer's disease, and Parkinson's disease. And so we always think about dry mouth, or always think about tooth decay being a childhood disease. And as you get out of your teen years, you become less prone to tooth decay. There's a little bit of truth to that, in that periodontal disease or gum disease becomes more pronounced as you start to get into your 30s, 40s, 50s. But as you get older, into your 60s, particularly with dry mouth, tooth decay becomes another problem again.
Wow. Geez, isn't it fun getting older, Joe?
Yeah, I don't really enjoy it that much as I get older and older.
It's one
know,
of my...
I would joke around that if I would have known I was going to live this long, I would have taken better care of myself.
The one of my best esteemed colleagues, Dr. Silvio Dupuy, who you know as well, saying that, you know, aging is not for the weak of heart, but it's better than the alternatives. Can you also, as we get older, can it also start creating issues with, you know, lips and tongue issues as well?
It's actually become, so there's tooth decay and gum disease that can be accelerated with, you know, made more serious with a dry mouth. But there's also a bunch of kind of quality of life things, like the inside of your mouth, you can get an inflammation of the mucosa inside your mouth, which is just uncomfortable. It's like sores and discomfort, and you can get sores at the corners of your mouth. You can get blistering of your lips and things like that. So while those aren't particularly, you know, terrible diseases, they're just quality of life type things. Another thing that you can get with the dry mouth is a fissured tongue, which sounds terrible, but it's basically you get these deep grooves in your tongue, and they can be uncomfortable. They get inflamed, and they can be a source of bad breath sometimes as well. And, you know, they're just not a, it's a quality of life kind of situation.
Wow. Well, I always learn when I chat with you. So let us talk about what can someone do for dry mouth.
Well, you know, as simple as it seems, the recommendation is that you drink or at least sip water throughout the day. The harder part maybe is to limit alcoholic beverages and beverages high in sugar or caffeine, like juices, sodas, teas, or coffee. Because you just really want water to keep the tissues and your mouth moist. Saliva has a pretty big role to play in preventing decay, and so that's one of the reasons the dryness promotes decay. And the other thing that, in the most serious cases, either your dentist or your doctor can often prescribe a saliva replacement approach. So there are some medicines that you can use to help replace saliva and keep your mouth moist, as well as if you're having an issue with decay, tooth decay, there are some strategies with fluoride applications and things like that that will help that. And that's one of the reasons in our HOW program at Northeast Delta Dental that we give people extra personalized benefits related to fluoride application once they become adults, because most of the research has been done to apply it to children when they're decay prone or cavity prone, but in adults, particularly older adults that have certain risk factors, they can also be decay prone or cavity prone. And so it's an important aspect of how we personalize the benefits at Northeast Delta Dental to help improve that quality of life and the decay, you know, to mitigate the risk of decay.
My smile is growing bigger and bigger because with the Health Oral Wellness Program, and my score is 3, I'm self-reporting on the air here, I do get that fluoride varnish when they're completed by cleaning, which is now 4 times a year. So it does work in practice, and I've noticed a definite improvement in my oral health. So nobody out there believes how exciting oral health and dental insurance is. But when they listen to Dr. Arante and the other dentists that we've had on, such as Dr. McKibben and Dr. Correa, I always get feedback, oh, my God, it's really good information. So more of that information will occur right after commercial break, which will be a Smile Power commercial from Delta Dental. Please stay tuned. Welcome back to Northeast Delta Dental this weekend of September 18th and 19th. And joining me is Dr. Joe Arante, one of my great colleagues at Northeast Delta Dental, who's worked with me for several years now and lives in the Concord area. And prior to being the vice president of network and clinical strategies, Joe was the CEO of Previsor, which is powering our Health World Wellness Program, which we alluded to prior to commercial break. And in the past has been a practicing dentist, has been an owner, CEO of his own insurance company, as well as large dental operations. But this weekend, we're going to be talking more about dry mouth. So let's talk about what are some of the lesser-known concerns related to oral health that a person should be aware of as they age?
Well, as I mentioned in
gum
the first
disease.
Half. Yeah, there's gum disease as you become an adult. Of course, there's the cavity-prone years, as people call it, when you're a teenager and younger. And then you actually become at risk for dry mouth because of all the medications you take and the variety of diseases you might have as you get older into your 60s and 70s and 80s. And, just as as far as how prevalent it is, about 30% of people over the age of 65 report that they have dry mouth, and it's about 40% for people over the age of 80. So it's a pretty prevalent condition, and it can drive a whole host of dental problems like tooth decay on the root surface is a little different than what you have when you're a child, but also discomfort, just in generally burning tongue syndrome and all sorts of weird symptomatic problems that cause quality of life issues, that cause discomfort with your soft tissues in your mouth and create a lot of havoc in your life, basically. And so it's important to mitigate and to be aware of your risk for dry mouth, particularly if you're taking particular drugs, antipsychotic drugs, anti-depression drugs, as well as a whole host of other high blood pressure type drugs and heart medications.
Well, that is very enlightening. So as you, we've talked a lot today about dry mouth and what you can do about it, drinking a lot of fluid, et cetera, and all of the other situations that result from it. But as a dentist, since you've been you're a bit long in the tooth like me, which you can explain how that expression came into being. What have you seen over the past 20 years that has improved the way dentists are practicing, moving away from you know, drilling and filling in more preventative? And do they teach that in dental school?
They have started to teach some of the less invasive techniques. And I know people don't want to hear the word invasive when you're talking about drilling and filling, but there are a bunch of techniques that are relate to how to arrest decay, particularly in young patients as well as older patients. You know, at one point in my career, I was the CEO of a company that delivered a variety of types of healthcare, but dentistry was one of them, into skilled nursing facilities. And I can tell you that some of the folks that are in skilled nursing facilities are so ill that sometimes they would have decay, but it was best to not treat them for the decay because the treatment might, you know, harm them medically and maybe even kill them because of the type of treatment that they required. And so we'd often use things like silver diamine fluoride, SDF, it's called, that arrests the decay, and a variety of strategies to keep things under control and keep people comfortable during the rest of their days, particularly when they didn't have a lot of days left.
Wow, that's very enlightening. And since you're talking about dental traveling to a location, can you describe for the listening audience the pretty terrific program that you manage with our partner VirtuDent, bringing dentistry or aspects of it to various Boys and Girls Clubs as well as to Spalding? Can you describe, you know, how that works?
Well, there, you know, the children that are participating in the Boys and Girls Clubs and Spalding and a couple of schools, they have very limited access to dental care for a variety of reasons. And VirtuDent is a company that has been sending dental hygienists to corporate campuses to do hygiene services to capture people that it's inconvenient for them to take off of work to go to the dentist for the hygiene services. But they're doing this charitable endeavor supported by us at Boys and Girls Clubs. And these are children that would probably not get access to dental care at all. And in fact, often we hear stories about how, you know, the child is 12 years old and it's the first time they've ever been to a dental appointment of any sorts, and or the first time that they've allowed anybody to look in their mouth and do these kinds of things. And so they provide hygiene services. We have a dentist who's reviews the cases through teledentistry, and it's a really cool service because all the children get fluoride, they get hygiene services or preventive services, they can do sealants, and they get radiographs and a variety of services that they would never get otherwise. It requires permission from the parents, and that sometimes is the most difficult part, but getting that permission and getting all the paperwork right. But it's a really cool thing that is happening, and I know it's really highly regarded by the people that run the Boys and Girls Clubs. They really appreciate the program.
And some of the stories that we hear, you know, of children that had, you know, had not seen a dentist, you know, by age 8. And, of course, nowadays, you know, we have a program, dentist by 1. You want to get your toddler, your baby into the dental office by at least age 1, if not before, if the teeth, baby teeth had erupted earlier. And some of these children, this was the first time that they had seen the dentist. So it's just moving. It brings tears to my eyes. But the program is vibrant, even in this day and age of, you know, being have to be careful for COVID, and it's working out quite nicely at the Concord Area Boys and Girls Club, Manchester, Nashua, and as Dr. Joe mentioned, Spalding. We had also moved that model into the corporate world because, surprisingly, as Joe knows, even when the employer, you know, pays for most of the dental premium, if not all of it, you know, anywhere between, you know, 10 and 40% of people don't go to the dentist. So some of our employer clients are asking us to bring this model to the employer's campus. And we did that for a while. But once COVID hit, obviously, you know, an employer doesn't want any sort of extra activity, you know, on campus. So you kind of set your sights, Joe, over the next 5 years. If a son and daughter of a parents asked you, that worked for us, asked you, well, is dentistry a great field to get into? I think your answer is going to be yes, but what's kind of your vision for dental schools and becoming a dentist in the decade of 2020?
Well, I do think it's still a great profession, and it's you're part of the healthcare system, and you take on a great deal of responsibility to care for people. But it's if it's something that you want to do and you love doing, it's a really great way to be fulfilled, and it's a good profession in that you get remunerated appropriately, and I tried to get my kids to become dentists, but they saw a workaholic in me and thought that was the average dentist, and I worked 70, 80 hours a week, and they thought, gee, I don't want to do that because that doesn't seem very balanced, and I was a bad example for them. But I have two sisters that are in dentistry, one that's a dentist and one that's a dental hygienist, and I think it's a great profession for women in particular, because you have a lot of flexibility and you can actually operate a practice and have time for other things if you so endeavor to do that, which is difficult to find in some of the medical professions and then some of the other other career paths that are really restricted by having a balance between home life and work life.
Yeah, that's well put. And the other, of course, trend is that with a lot of students coming out of dental school with significant debt, and as Joe is very apt to explain, I mean, the average, might be $300,000, but that includes people's whose uncles or parents paid for the whole tuition. So a lot of people can come out with upwards of $500,000 in debt. Some new graduates and new dentists go to work for, dental service organizations, and other large dental practices. So they're more like a salaried employee and have less of the responsibility and the workaholism that you and I have, Joe. So, yeah, so I concur. It still is a great profession. So thanks for explaining it that way. So we're coming to the end of the line, but I always do a quick lightning round. So
right.
Manual toothbrush versus electric toothbrush.
Well, as I've said before, whichever one works well in your hands, and as you get older, sometimes the electric toothbrush is a little bit better because your dexterity starts to move, go away a little bit, and maybe even with arthritis, sometimes it's difficult to grab the small handle of the brush. But either way is fine as long as you're using a fluoridated fluoride toothpaste, because that's a really important part, particularly when you're cavity prone, and then as a senior again, where you've become cavity prone again, but for the different kind of cavity or tooth decay, it's important to use fluoride.
And you're a mind reader, because that was going to be my next lightning round. With all the different toothpaste that you see in the aisle at the drugstore, does it really matter? And it sounds like as long as that toothpaste has fluoride, you're good to go.
I think that generally speaking, that's true. But there are a lot of formulations that are designed to reduce, tartar or calculus, or to deal with gum disease, and some that are less dehydrating if you have dry mouth, and some that are more. There's a variety of formulations, and I would typically go with what your dentist recommends for you, but there's even sensitive toothpaste. Some people, as they get older, get some gum resorption, where the gums move away from the root surfaces of the teeth, and they have sensitive teeth to ice cream and things like that. So, of course, sensitive toothpaste is good. They're all good as long as they have fluoride in them.
Beautiful explanation. So thank you, Dr. Joe Arante. Thank you for being a great member of the Concord community and the oral health community in New Hampshire, and for your leadership at Northeast Delta Dental. And we're going to have you back on soon. Thank you, Dr. Arante.
All right, thank you.
Tom Raffio returns next week and with more of Northeast Delta Dental Radio.